This is Dan Quick, TD Gaming Podcast and Video Game Roundtable regular co-host from April 2012 to January 2013. Congratulations on 400 episodes of the VGRT. Game on!
Table episode 400, recorded on March 16th, 2020.
The 567th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 400th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I'm TJ Dunzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
You know, it figures that the 400th episode would be during the apocalypse.
Everything is canceled.
That doesn't bother me. It's just everybody's acting like it's a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah, it's crazy. All the toilet paper has been bought out, all the bread. Almost everything has been bought out except for coffee creamer,
That makes no sense to me. It makes zero sense to me. I will say I saw a news item in which one guy in Tennessee, I think it was, bought up 17,000 hand sanitizers.
I saw that story.
And he was forced to give it away for free because that's called price gouging. Here's the thing. What the hell do you think you're going to do with all the toilet paper? Do you have the shits? How many toilet paper rolls do you use in one day? I mean, it takes me a few weeks for me to get through one roll. And little hint, I'm poor, so whenever toilet paper or paper towels are on sale, I buy it in bulk. So I always have a lot of it. I don't need toilet paper. That's for rich. Buying it on the spot is for rich people. It's just annoying.
I know. It is.
And bread? How much bread are you going to eat? And I hate to tell you this, but bread goes bad.
Yeah, it goes
quickly,
bad fast.
Especially in Florida.
It's stupid. It is really stupid. All you're doing is panicking. I mean, I know usually that sort of stuff happens, especially in the South, when there's a big hurricane coming. Then people go nuts and buy up stores. But it's not like they're not going to lock your doors and force you to stay home 24/7. I mean, I'm in trouble because I'm a contractor, so. I mean, they're going to have people being paid, you know, if they're not going to work. I have friends, though. One friend sent me $1,000. So, it's like, hopefully it'll be done. Here's a little thing. They said, I know one sports league say they're going to, I think major leagues are going to start by May. Which is what they think is going to be the end of the bell curve. Because here's the thing, you can't stop it, but what they're trying to do is lower the bell curve. So instead of having a high peak, you have a very low peak. So yeah. Hmm. And the thing is that us video gamers are well prepared for this.
Yeah, that's true.
Are you telling us to stay home? Gee, what will we ever do?
Play Animal Crossing or some other game.
Actually, there is a news item about that in the articles. We'll discuss it later. One thing cute happened in Japan, and Scott already knows about this, but a grade school, they couldn't have their graduation, so they virtually had their graduation in Minecraft.
Oh, yeah, that was cool. Really cool to see.
Yes.
So, it's not a graduate. Can you toss your cap in Minecraft? I don't think so. It's a grade school.
You could toss other stuff. They would toss their picks or blocks or whatever they're holding.
Around pigs and cats and dogs. I don't think they have cats in Minecraft.
Yeah, they got cats.
Oh, they do? Oh, okay.
Yeah, they wouldn't throw a cap, but they could throw other stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, they could throw their helmet. So I guess, yes, they can throw their cap.
One streamer got banned for slapping his cat several times on a live stream.
That's just I don't know. Man, people are...
Czech guy, and he got banned.
I watched a girl lick a toilet and say coronavirus challenge. I don't know what's wrong with people. People are just broken. Lysol.
Come on. And that's not how you get coronavirus.
I know. It's just stupid.
I mean, you can get sporidium that way, or...
It's stupid. It's just stupid.
People act stupid in this sort of thing. But there's other stuff, too. There's a lot of stuff going on, but a lot of it is not ultimately interesting. So we're going to skip what have you been playing. We're just going to go straight to the news items because I'm too bored for that. I'm kidding. What have you been playing, TJ?
I've been playing Neo 2. Everyone,
Neo 2? Oh, it just came out. I didn't even know it came out. See, that's how divorced I am from reality. I didn't even know Neo 2 came out.
Mm-hmm. It came out on Friday. And it's
An article called How Hard is Neo 2 Really? You know, and I just thought they had a preview copy.
It is quite hard. I played through the entire first game and I beat it, and I came into the second game and I beat my ass. Like, everything can kill you in 2 to 3 hits. And it's kind of like, I guess it's been a while since I played, so I'm a little rusty, but it's fun. It's everything I liked about the first game, but more.
Well, we know who the developer is, and if they decide they want to make a game hard, they will make a game fucking hard.
Oh, yeah. Team Ninja is no, takes no prisoners.
All you have to do is tell people, Ninja Gaiden Black, and they'll...
yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Was Ninja Gaiden 2 harder than Ninja Gaiden Black?
That's...
I don't remember. I know that Ninja Gaiden 3 was easier than fuck.
I know. I would say that Black was harder. But Neo 2, pretty good. They've added a few different features that I really enjoy. They've added a couple new weapons that I really like. One of them is the Switchglaive, which it's basically a scythe that can transform into a spear sword, which can also transform into a basically kind of like the cleaver from Bloodborne. It's really fun to play with, and they've got some new things for all the abilities. Like, they gave you the ability to kill certain demons and take their souls and collect an attack from them. So that's kind of interesting and fun. And like I said, it's a lot of the first game, just more. And I'm having a good time with it, despite the fact that it's beating me up terribly. Like in the first mission, there are just some crappy samurai running around, and like if any of them happens to hit you, you like it takes a little bit for you to recover, and then they just wail on you two more times, and you're dead. That's that. And it really does take some patience because it doesn't mess around with like throwing you right up against things that like will not let you survive. So. Still good, though.
How about you, Scott?
I have been mostly just playing Minecraft and the Animal Crossing New Leaf, just to, you know, in preparation for New Horizons. So I haven't been playing anything new, but yeah, that's what I've been playing. Oh. Sorry.
I've been playing Ori and the not the Will of the Wisps, even though I could. Ori and the Blind Forest, because I'm not going to play Ori and the Will of the Wisps until I finish Ori and the Blind Forest. And it's okay. It's a pretty game, but there's some really irritating parts of it. Like there's one in which you have to escape a flood after you complete the tree. And it irritates the hell out of me because they do not do very good design on that. The colors are blended, are washed out. You can't really tell where you're supposed to be going. A lot of it is hit and miss. And it, to be plain about it, it's just not fun, you know? I mean, here's the thing. I'd rather... I don't want a game to be clever. I want a game to be smart. You know, that's my entire thing.
Hmm.
I sent back... Oh, I guess sent back a game. I forgot the name of it already. But I'm getting back Civilization VI for the Xbox One. So I'm gonna be seeing what the game is like on console, and maybe earn some achievements along the way too.
That'll be interesting to see. I did play Ori and the Blind Forest. I don't know if I got that far. I thought I got to a tree. I don't know if I cured a tree, but
this tree is you fill it up with water. It fills up with water when you cure it, and
yeah.
You have to outrace the water coming from below.
It's irritating
as fuck.
The platforming is difficult on that game. I know you get stuck, and that's what I don't like about platformer games. If you're stuck at one place where you have to make a jump, that's it. You're done until you can pass this little stupid jump.
Yeah,
and that's why
when I found that happening, I would just go in a different direction, and usually you would find out different abilities. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of the game is like, well, that you can't access this area. Oh, look, now you can wall climb.
Yeah.
And once you can double jump, basically, that's all you really need. I mean, well, there's also the running, I mean, the gliding part. But I haven't figured out how to use it. I earned it, but I don't know how to use it. So, I also updated State of Decay 2 to the Juggernaut Edition, which adds a whole new area to the game, which is fine. I mean... It's better than it's basically a Seattle area sort of, or maybe Minnesota because they have a Paul Bunyan near the entrance to your first thing, and it has all the DLC included. So a lot of the game-breaking weaponry is now in my possession. So it's okay. I have Gree, but I haven't played it yet.
Hmm.
So, and that's that. I'm still waiting for Out of the Park Baseball 20. Oh, the thing that I forgot about, which I'm going to talk about right now, is that since there's very few sports, and as a matter of fact, one of the things I noticed is that if you go to ESPN right now, the top sports scores on the top line are for Mexican soccer, Russian soccer, and the UFC, which tells you what the state of sports is like. But, clubs, real soccer clubs, and other people have been playing Football Manager on a stream, and it's sort of like they're getting into it like it's a real game. You know, they're texting the results. They're what's it called? The real clubs are just, and also, football clubs are also playing tic-tac-toe on Twitter as well as Connect Four on Twitter. Against each other. And it's really surreal and funny. I remember one person tweeting that for a second he thought that soccer had returned, but no, it's just a simulation. Which is why when Out of the Park 20 comes, which is coming on the 20th, I'll probably be live streaming games. So that, you know, I want to see how people react to that. If I had MLB The Show 20, I'd be doing that, but I don't, so I can't. That'll be next year. And I think the coronavirus... Or actually, you know, it's kind of misleading to say coronavirus because SARS is a coronavirus. It's COVID-19 is the name
right.
of this particular coronavirus. So, yeah, while COVID is... COVID will probably be gone by next year. And if it isn't, then something seriously went wrong.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be that long, especially with, like...
The thing, they already have... the Chinese have actually gotten to the point in which they no longer have a... certain Asian countries have already gotten past it.
South Korea and China, their recovery rate has gone above their infection rate, I guess, is what it was. They have more people recovering than are cases being made. So they're coming out of the bell curve as it is. Ours is just started getting started though.
I know there are two games coming out that both of you are really looking forward to, but we'll talk about that in a moment. We're going to move on to the first news item. E3 2020 canceled, and this comes to us from Wired Magazine. E3 2020 is officially canceled due to the coronavirus concerns. In lieu of a traditional convention, many publishers are exploring other ways to deliver their news and provide a look at the games on the way. Microsoft, which owns the Microsoft Theater next to the convention center where E3 is held each year, will host an Xbox digital event. Details about the event and when we can expect to see it will be announced in the coming weeks. Nintendo has responded with support to ESA's decision to cancel the show, which isn't too surprising because Nintendo really basically gave up the show anyway. They always had a section, but the section was just a bunch of demos. They'll probably do their usual live stream this year as well. And as for me, E3 2020 being canceled, it's who cares? I really don't care. I might have gone this year, but I really didn't care because someone else would have paid for my flight. But E3, for me, in the past few years, has become a non-entity. And most people, they only know E3 from the stream, so nothing's really changed.
Yeah, I mean, this was... It's bad for a lot of indie companies that won't be able to, like, get in front of people and share their game and be able to pitch it to them,
actually,
but...
you know, here's the thing. That's not true because, you know what, it used to be that... a lot of indie games would get their notice at E3, like Stalker. You know, you'd have these surprises in like late 90s and early 2000s. You know, these surprises that would pop out at E3 that you didn't know anything about, and all of a sudden they become hot games. That doesn't happen anymore because everybody knows everything going in. And there are very few games that debut at E3 that aren't already known.
I've had a few that, like, even in this last couple of years, I've definitely had a few that, like, I had no idea about them before, and I know a lot of other people didn't have an idea about them before that we went there, and it's like it kind of sucks for those people that they're not going to be able to, like, put that in another place where the people can see it and people can enjoy it, and I mean, there is PAX. But E3 is kind of the big one for those folks. And I do know that E3 has also not been entirely kind to indies. But at the end of the day, bottom line, it's still a place where indies could happen and deals could happen around them and people could put their product out in front of other people.
Well, you know, still on schedule is Gamescom, and that's where people now go.
Yeah. I mean, like, big publishers, Sony, Nintendo, Xbox, everyone, they'll be fine because they have the money to do, like, directs. They have no issue doing live streams. It's cool to have the booth on the floor, and it's cool to see the experience and play the games, but, like, they don't suffer from not being able to be there and put on a press conference.
Just the opposite. They don't have to pay for the space.
So, ultimately, I hope that, like, I read this statement from the ESA, and I hope they stay true to their word, and they take this year to, like, reimagine the show and revitalize it into something that will actually matter to people, because I agree, it's, like, the more... Everyone I've ever talked to that has gone to E3 for more than 5 years has talked frequently about the decline of the experience, especially in the last couple of years when they started letting the public in.
I just think they should just just copy Gamescom. Because
I mean,
Gamescom,
yeah,
does – it understands that there are fans and there are press, and they have one special day just for press. And the rest of it, you know, they have where the fans can go and where the press can go, you know. And it's divided evenly, and people have fun time instead of the fans just going and spending 5 hours on a line to see a 10-minute video and then wondering what the hell they spent all that money to go for.
Yeah, I fully agree. I 100% agree that they should figure out a way to adapt the good parts of Gamescom, because Gamescom had it figured out. They have like the one day that's entirely media, and then even on the days that they have public, there's a section that's just cordoned off to the public that's just for media and just for meetings.
Because here's the thing. E3 is still working on the idea that there are a lot of gaming magazines that require 3-month advance and acting like there are no live streams and that, you know, no one needs to be at E3 anymore. You know, you have to give people a reason to actually go.
Right.
You know, it used to be E3 was not for the press, actually. It was for GameStop reps to go, figure out what games to order and put on their stock, you know, and games to find publishers and all that stuff. I mean, they had the press because no one cared.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope they take this year to heart, and I hope they take all the feedback people have been giving them, and I hope they like evolve it into something that is sustainable for really, because the way it was going, it was not sustainable.
And here's the thing, you know, a lot of public, I mean, Microsoft has their own X event, which has become bigger than for if you own an Xbox or you're just interested in what Microsoft is doing. The X event had a lot more than what they were showing at E3, aside from the press briefing. You know, Sony has their event, Nintendo has their event, Electronic Arts started doing their own little event outside of E3 with, you know. And here's the thing, even people, I remember going to the EA Play and, you know, as press, and people who were watching it online were mocking it, but if you were there, it was the coolest shit. You know, they had all the games set up to play, they had a lot of freebies for people, you know. So I think that's EA is showing what people really want. Because here's the thing, imagine if E3 was run like BlizzCon, you know? You pay for your ticket, and when you go in, you're given a bag of swag. You know, a free game, some tchotchkes and all that stuff, like they do at BlizzCon. I mean, I remember you go to BlizzCon, you would get the upcoming World of Warcraft expansion for free. And it wasn't a code, it was the actual box with a disc in it, you know. So they should do what BlizzCon does, you know. I've never been to QuakeCon. I'm pretty sure it's much of the same. Yeah, they had the Call of Duty Con, and I wish they still did it, because from what I understand, people who love Call of Duty were really rocking out to it. But I guess it was too expensive for Activision.
QuakeCon was still thoroughly attended, and like is still thoroughly attended because it's one of the largest LAN parties in the United States.
And also, it's Bethesda. I mean, it's id Software, it's Bethesda, you know, and it's a way, you know. Let me ask you a question. Does QuakeCon focus more heavy on esports now?
They do have a bunch of esports tournaments. And I would say that it's more about like LAN competitions and esports than it is about game reveals. They still do game reveals and news. A bunch of like Fallout 76 and Doom Eternal have been shown at QuakeCon.
Yeah, and Quake has bombed badly, even though it was free.
Quake Champions isn't a Quake game. I'm just gonna put that opinion out there.
Unreal Tournament game.
It's a terrible game, is what it is.
I really want a new Unreal Tournament, but one that's based on the original game.
Yeah, I would enjoy that too. I don't think that Epic is going back to the Unreal Tournament anytime soon because they're basically printing money with Fortnite. But one can dream. E3, it's not the worst thing in the world that it was canceled this year, because hopefully it will come back with hopefully they'll figure out some way to make 2021 interesting. And I mean, like,
Scott, you've never been to E3, right?
No, I have not.
What is your experience when just dealing with streams?
I've enjoyed the streams. You know, some of the shows have been very interesting. I remember, I think it was, Bethesda when they showed Rage and they had the band come out and the different things for the Xbox streams. So those were nice. And I enjoyed the PC release ones, even though there were a lot more. Yeah, the PC gaming show. I think I watched 2 years of that one, and the host there is, you know, very nice and energetic, and it's very quick because they have a lot of games to cover, and it's very kind of toned down compared to the other streams. But I always enjoyed it because I think I just enjoyed that they were energetic about it and not like bored or something. You know, they were enthused to talk about the games that the developers were trying to show us.
Hey, TJ, you know, I didn't even know this was happening, but they're finally releasing Manhunt, the game that we saw 2 years ago at PC Gaming Show alongside Rapture Rejects. You know that shark game where you hunt?
Yes.
It's coming out this week. Not even know that it was coming out.
You mean Maneater, right?
Maneater. Yeah,
which is from Tripwire Interactive, no less.
And you play as a shark, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Actually, you know, it didn't have a publisher until after that because Maneater.com no longer exists. Now it's on Tripwire's site.
It is the world's first shark RPG.
Not true, but okay.
Is it?
No, I mean, the Atari 2600 had Jaws, in which you did the same thing.
You play as Jaws in the Atari 2600?
Yeah, in the 2600 game Jaws.
Well then, still, it's good. Like my colleagues have had a chance to play it. We did a hands-on preview at Shack News, and like the whole thing is just a wonderful to watch. It looks like it might be a little bit grindy, but like you're a shark just like attacking all getting in shark fights with all sorts of other fish to become a bigger, better shark. So,
you know, when we were talking about the best video game trailers, I should have remembered the one for Rapture Rejects. That one was excellent. I mean, it's kind of cheating because it's Cyanide and Truth. Oh, damn it. Cyanide and Happiness. But still, it was hilarious. You remember that trailer, right?
Truth and Errors. Cyanide and Happiness?
With the Rapture.
Yeah, I saw that trailer as well.
It was hilarious.
I can't believe
not all about it. I mean, the trailer for Maneater was good. I remember because there was no setup for it. I mean, the way it opens up, it's just, you know, a beach advertisement. So you know something fucked up is going to happen. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people thought it was just going to be a zombie game. And then the shark comes out and starts eating people. So, yeah. Anyways, let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ. I know you're salivating over this.
Resident Evil 3 Remake Demo lets you visit Raccoon City early this week from PC Gamer. Capcom teased a Resident Evil 3 Remake demo back in February, and you'll be able to get your hands on it this week. The Resident Evil Raccoon City demo will give you an early taste of the city as it falls apart on March 19th. What you'll be getting up to in the demo, Capcom's not telling us. But expect to see, fill zombies with lead. Remember to go for the kneecaps. And if you're lucky, meet the star of the game, Nemesis. A week later, March 27, you'll be able to try your luck at surviving the undead in the Resident Evil Resistance's open beta. The co-op asymmetrical horror romp will be bundled with the main game at launch, but it's otherwise separate and not canon. As well as playing survivors, you'll also be able to play as a villain, hiding behind cameras and sending out enemies or placing traps to catch players. Resident Evil 3 Remake and Resistance both launch on April 3rd.
You know, that description of Resident Evil's Resistance, that's basically Fable, the Fable game that they were promising, in which you could have players playing in Fable, but you'd also have someone playing the villain and launching monsters and traps as you go along.
Yeah, it's an interesting take on 4-1, 4-versus-1 style. And I'm really, really, really hoping that it plays similar to Resident Evil Outbreak that came out back in the day, which was – it was a game where – it was one of the first PlayStation 2 online games, and you would literally play as one of like 8 survivors that had special ability – that had their own special abilities, and you would play through like fully realized scenarios and try to finish those scenarios in order to move forward. Now there was like there was no element of a human controlling like the bad guys, like there was no one, like there was no human playing as like Traps and Mr. X, but it's still like every time I see Resident Evil Resistance, it gives me those similar vibes of Resident Evil Outbreak, and I really hope it turns out to be that way.
So here's the thing, though: it's not like Left 4 Dead's multiplayer in which someone plays as a zombie or as a special zombie. You're not going to be playing as Mr. X or as Nemesis. You'll be placing enemies and sending traps out. So your role is more of a mastermind than an actual attacker. You know, so mm-hmm. you have to think with a little bit of strategy. Find out.
Sounds like a dungeon keeper a little bit, only you're a zombie keeper.
Yeah, but in this case, the heroes that are coming into your dungeon are actual players.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that players are smart. So they may see your that's an obvious choke point. So you have to, you know, really figure things out. Like, put the trap just beyond the choke point. Make them nervous a bit.
Right. Give them a false sense of security.
Yeah. Or just ramp up the tension. So we know that TJ is drooling over Resident Evil 3, and he's been that way since they first announced it.
Dang, it looks good. Like I'm.
Oh yeah, I posted the video trailer. Did you watch that?
Yeah, of course. There is so much, and like I thought it would be kind of lame to see all these trailers with Nemesis and see everything he can do, but like he looks terrifying. Like he gets a flamethrower, and that's just not cool. Who decided that Nemesis gets to have a flamethrower? A rocket launcher was bad enough. And then there's just like I've seen the leaks, I've seen a bunch of the monsters that are in the game, and like just like these are still shots of them. So like imagining the way that they'll attack you and the ways in which you can die in that game, I morbidly enjoy death animations in horror games, and Resident Evil, like Resident Evil 2 to Resident Evil 4 to Resident Evil like 7. And then up to Resident Evil 2 Remake are like probably the top tier on death animations in horror games, right up there with Dead Space. Dead Space 2 is probably the most grisly horror game out there.
I hope they maintain the camp of Resident Evil 4 whenever they get to it.
I do too.
Here's the thing: for those who don't know, Resident Evil 1, 2, and 3 are played basically seriously, even though they're batshit insane and kind of kooky. But Resident Evil 4 is self-aware and knows that it's kooky and plays up the kookiness. I mean, where else would you have a little person dressed in a Napoleon outfit being the mastermind? So I hope they don't try to go ultra-realistic, because that would kind of destroy things. I mean, you have to deal with you have possessed zombie, I don't know what you could call them, because they have little things growing out of them.
Yeah, it's basically a hive mind thing going on, where they act normal up until something disturbs them, and then they all work together against you.
But the thing is, sometimes a plant will sprout out of their head, and you have to kill that, too.
Mm-hmm. It's basically a parasite that gives them hive mind qualities. And can also attack you once it grows. But yeah, man, like this is going to be a good game. I'm really excited for both Resident Evil 3 Remake, and I'm excited for Project Resistance. That's going to be easily. I feel like if everything goes the way it's supposed to, and it's as good as Resident Evil 2 Remake was, that's going to be top. That's going to be game of the year material for me right there.
I'm always a sucker for horror co-op games. Which is why Evolve was so disappointing, because that was 4-1, but the one was overpowered. And no one wanted to play one of the human characters. They always wanted to be the beast. In this case, you're not playing the beast. You're just playing someone who's manipulating the beasts.
Are you going to be checking out Predator Hunting Grounds?
Maybe. We'll see.
Because that's got a similar vibe. It does have a similar vibe where it's the humans versus the overpowered Predator. But I don't know. It's looked very interesting, and they've got a free weekend of it coming up at the end of this month. I do believe it's the 27th through the 29th.
There's a lot of free weekends coming up. I mean, I sent Scott the beta access for the Hogwarts Quidditch game, or basically it's not Harry Potter. It's just Harry Potter Grand X, in which you play Quidditch, but it's not called Quidditch because it's because of the copyright.
Right.
Have you actually played it yet?
No, I haven't.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Xbox Live struggled to cope with demand last night. And by last night, we mean today is the 16th. With the coronavirus situation worsening and increasing number of players opting to stay at home, online gaming is likely to experience a huge surge in popularity, and judging by Xbox Live's problems yesterday, it's already happening. Around 8 p.m. UK time last night, users started to report problems accessing Xbox Live services, meaning they can no longer access the online features of their games, or in some cases were unable to sign in. According to reports aggregated by Down Detector, this peaked around 9 p.m. UK and affected players across the globe. At this point, the Xbox support account tweeted to confirm there was investigating issues, but it wasn't until 11:20 p.m. UK time that the account tweeted again to confirm the problems had been restored. Head of Xbox, Phil Spencer, explained that the Xbox had seen an increase in usage on almost everything, commending the work of the IT teams in managing to keep the services running. He also added that it was heartening to hear from so many people using gaming as a way to stay connected during these times. It's unlikely this will be the only outage that's experienced, as online demand will rapidly increase for it. In Italy, the school shutdown has caused a significant surge in internet traffic because kids are turning into games such as Fortnite and Call of Duty for their entertainment. One Italian internet provider reported an increase of traffic of over 70%, with online gaming being, quote-unquote, a big contribution. Counter-Strike Global Offensive has continued to break records over the weekend, hitting 1 million concurrent players thanks to the combination of rising popularity in China and increased numbers of people staying home. Animal Crossing New Horizons drops later this week, and that doesn't require an internet connection.
And Steam had 20 million people, concurrent players as well. So there'll be a lot of people gaming this next couple weeks, and Animal Crossing looks like a good game to play, too.
I just, you know, Counter-Strike is people still playing Counter-Strike.
I
know that, but it's sort of like Counter-Strike is so antiquated that, I don't know.
It's a shooting game. I mean, it doesn't matter what it's called.
Yeah, there's other shooting games too, you know.
True.
And how many times can you play Dust? It's just... I think people also play a little bit of Office. See, it's so old, I know the levels.
I don't know. Some people just like classics. You'd have to go find someone and ask them why they like CSGO, I guess.
I just want to play Unreal Tournament with Facing Worlds again. And 90% of the audience has no idea what I'm talking about.
I can tell you exactly why people have told me they like CSGO compared to other shooters. And it's like...
Fast rounds.
There is nothing quite like CSGO. There are things that are similar, but there's nothing quite exactly like CSGO.
See, now that I can get, because there are games that are similar to Minecraft or Animal Crossing, but they're not quite like it. You know, they don't quite do what that game does. So there are differences, and that difference is usually enough to keep people coming back.
Right.
What is it? Like Counter-Strike is the only game that has a more toxic community than League of Legends?
I would argue that League of Legends is more toxic.
I don't know. Counter-Strike is the grand old dad of kids using, what's it called, slurs.
For sure. But they also crack down on that shit pretty hard. Whereas League of Legends is kind of like a wild wasteland.
I think League of Legends is where the term get good came from.
I think I heard that some games were banning people for, you know, using racial slurs and whatnot.
And smacking cats around.
Yeah. I mean, wow.
I mean, you're right, though, Jonah. It is a very toxic game, so much so that they just introduced a new mechanic where everyone is auto-muted, and you can choose to unmute them when you go into a game.
Actually, I bought the Counter-Strike that came with just playing bots, and that was really fun.
Speaking of toxic gameplay, I never really liked that Little Big Planet had a mechanic where you could slap people with the little sack bots.
After you finish the level, you can just smack each other around.
Right, and it's like you never use it to solve any puzzles or interact with the environment. You're just smacking each other.
Yeah, that's the entire point, isn't it?
Yeah, I didn't really like that, and I didn't see the point of having that in the game.
Yeah, but I can look at games and be like, this was clearly inspired by this other game and shares so many things with it. Like Overwatch. Overwatch is clearly inspired by Monday Night Combat and Team Fortress 2. Everything that is in Overwatch can be traced back to Team Fortress 2 and Monday Night Combat. Call of Duty and Counter-Strike are not the same game at all. Like, they have some similarities, but they do not play out the same.
One of the Jaws ripoffs was basically Atari 2600 Pac-Man, but with sharks.
Mm-hmm. I think a big part of Counter-Strike's uniqueness is that whole buying wheel thing, where like you earn money from each round to purchase your loadout for the next round.
Yeah, I learned very quickly that some of the weapons are just overpriced garbage.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, like the Gatling gun.
Although I was one of the few people who knew how to use that thing, and basically it would be just make sure there are no snipers.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, when you get to that intersection where everybody throws their smoke bomb, just empty that thing out. And here's the thing about me when I was playing Counter-Strike. I really didn't like the rifles all that much. I was a pistol dude. I killed people with a pistol much more.
Yeah.
Just bang, 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 you're dead.
And that's what has made the pro scene interesting, is that like people have shown that like you would think that once you got the money and you get the guns that you can just run away with the game because you have the AK-47 and they just have the pistols. Nope, a good pro can still shoot you down with a pistol.
Yeah, I mean, I would always make sure the thing I would buy immediately was the helmet and the armor.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I used to do on Unreal Tournament. I would just have the pistol basic gun, and that seemed to work just fine, taking people out.
I know people in Halo were deadly with the original pistol. It was like a hand cannon.
The original pistol in Halo is so good, and it's so not,
but a pistol.
It's so not as good in future Halo games that it makes me sad.
They brought it back in 5, though. They brought it back in 5. They brought back the Magnum. And I would fucking use the Magnum to death in Halo 5 multiplayer. As a matter of fact, I would go into these matches, I would just be killing people with my Magnum. Screw that. Screw that mess. Yeah, you have the sword, well guess what? You're dead before you even get within 5 feet of me. That's what I like about Halo 5 is that, yeah, it has microtransactions, but the thing is that I only have to do is play 5 war zones and boom, I have enough to buy a gold wreck, and, you know, I never spent a penny on getting wrecks. And the thing is that I would still have tons of stuff from my other wrecks that, you know, is just basically building up.
Are you still with us, Jonah?
Yeah.
Okay, you cut out for just a sec.
That was you. Anyways, so 400 episodes. The Video Game Roundtable started in 2009. And, it's amazing to me that I've stuck with this thing for 11 years, nonstop. I have not missed an episode except for various times, but it would never be for more than 1 week. And it's just, I don't know, it's just dedication. I've gone through so many co-hosts. I've had Richard, I've had Felipe, I've had Paul, I've had Jordan, I've had guest hosts like Hillary and Andrew, and then I've had the two of you. So, mm-hmm. And I also, of course, had Dan. So here's the thing. For the longest time, it was me, Paul, Dan, or me, Paul, and Jordan. Actually, you know, I don't know. I wonder if it was a four-way podcast for a while with me, Dan, Jordan, and Paul. I think Dan might have been a replacement for Jordan. What were you about to say, Scott?
I think there were a couple episodes where you had four people with Dan, Jordan, and Paul, and you yourself.
I
know there were guest episodes where we had Dan and me and you, and I think Paul.
And then Paul got a life. Jordan quit. Dan had his own thing. And then he retired from that thing, too, so Scott is running that thing now. So basically, I've had you two, and you both have no lives. Thanks.
Dang.
I have a life.
Here's the thing, though.
You're the one that's single over there. Don't.
Well, here's the thing. TJ, for one thing, was at Twin Galaxies, and now he's writing for Shack News, which is one of the more venerable news websites. As a matter of fact, if you go to Steam and you go to a game page and you look at their news, it's always Shack News that they use for their news items for that game. I mean, I think Shack News is just behind Blues News for longevity as a news site. And Scott is just knee-deep in Civilization.
Yeah, and various other games.
Yeah, but your podcast is all about the Civs. All about the former Apolliton. Do they still call it Apolliton or not?
No, it's not Apolliton. It's, Dan's going to be mad at me. It is not Apolliton. He left Apolliton quite a while ago, and it's Civ Fanatics. That's what it was.
Okay, Civ Fanatics, yeah. And for those of you who want to know, it's the Turncast, or is that the live show? That's the game
the Turncast.
Show, right?
Turncast is when we record our game session of Civilization.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Then yes, Turncast is when we record our gaming sessions and then put it into podcast form, like about 15-minute episodes, and just basic jokes, smack talk, and other various instances happening. Maybe rage against computer cheating or whatever.
And what's the one that's actually about Civ then?
That's Polycast.
Polycast, right.
Yes.
Which is the lone remnant from Apolliton.
Yes.
We should do that. We should have a live stream. And what I would live stream is us playing Jackbox.
Oh, that would be cool.
What do you think, TJ? Would you like to play some Jackbox?
I love Jackbox.
I just got Jackbox 6. I'm trying to evaluate it. A lot of people still go with the venerable Jackbox 2 because it has Quiplash 2, or the best of the Quiplashes, but 5 has some really good ones that I enjoy. 6 has some good ones and some meh ones. They actually included with Jackbox 6 a hidden role trader game that has nothing to do with the usual word game playing that you have. But I tried it with 4 people and it sucked. I think that really you need 10 people to play, just like any good Resistance / Avalon game. So yeah, you know what? And here's the other thing is I have enough. Since I have my new computer, I actually can live stream us doing this podcast too. On Mixer, so that should be interesting. We'll see what happens if we do that. Anyways, but this has been 400 episodes. I haven't checked to see how many episodes you two have been on. I'm gonna find out and report it next week.
I feel like I came in somewhere around 250.
Yeah. Well, Scott's been around for a... Wait, Scott. No, you
yes.
came after TJ, didn't you?
No, I was
no,
before
he came
TJ.
Before me.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right, because it was me, you, and Paul for a while.
Yes.
And occasionally Dan.
And
Dan would jump in whenever Paul was not available.
How? How did you decide on TJ? Because I always wondered. I don't remember if he ever really said. He just showed up. I mean, you just brought him on.
And he was writing for. He was still writing for Strategy Informer / Game Watcher.
Yes, we were both writing at Game Watcher, and Jonah asked if I wanted.
Yeah, we had the. I think it was because we were having a mass Skype with everybody, and I just brought up the. Does anybody want to help me with the podcast? So.
Okay.
Fortunately, TJ had the voice. He has a radio voice. And the radio voice is something that's slightly Midwestern, but also very forceful. It's true.
I also have a face for radio.
That's not true. And in that time, TJ's gotten married.
Yeah.
I can't see really say anything about Scott because he was already married and you already had a kid.
Yeah.
But Scott, unless you have another kid, there's no.
Scott has played more RPGs since then.
Yes, I have. This is true.
Oh, that's right. You know, here's the thing. Well, after Scott joined up, Larian went into overdrive and Obsidian went into overdrive.
That's
So we were talking about Pillars of Eternity and Divinity and.
Yeah, the
Baldur's Gate returning and all that
the
stuff.
The isometric RPG renaissance has began.
No, it isn't the RPG renaissance. It's the
isometric
RPG renaissance.
Yeah, yes.
You didn't even have a chance to complain about there were no old-style isometric RPGs. They just plopped in our head. The only thing we can complain about now is there's no gold box-style RPGs.
Yeah, that's true, but, maybe one day that dream will come true. I don't know, because I did tweet Josh Sawyer, and he hearted that comment, so maybe.
Well, actually, here's the thing. It did come true, because Wizardry 10 was in the Bard's Tale style. Mm-hmm. And they did re-release Bard's Tale Remastered, too.
And more isometric RPGs are coming with the Beyond Realms and Black Geyser. I'm not sure what their release dates are, but I know that they both went to Kickstarter and got their funding, and they've been still developing, so it's progressing.
Yeah, Larry.
Really know what you guys are talking about when you say gold box RPGs, because that was before my time.
Are you kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? SSI. Gold Box,
yeah.
they were the first Dungeons & Dragons licensed games by SSI. And here's the thing, is that before that, you had stuff like Wizard's Crown and stuff that was almost kind of sort of AD&D.
Mm-hmm.
The Gold Box games were the first time it was actually Dungeons & Dragons licensed, boom.
The Gold Box games are also available on goodoldgames.com, and they are Azure Bonds, Pools of Radiance.
That's the second game. The first game was Pools of Radiance.
Well, there's a whole bunch. Yeah, Pools of Radiance, Azure Bonds, Silver Shield. And then they have the Hillsfar, and then they have the Savage
Enzo
Frontier.
I forgot how to pronounce that friggin' thing. Menzo Bazanar.
Yeah,
Menzo
Baraban.
Sort of like proto Elder Scrolls.
Yeah.
I googled Gold Box RPG, and one of the first images that pops up is a buff-ass demon ghost, and so I'm cool with it.
Wait.
I'll share this in the chat.
Let me see. Well, I see SSI Gold Box. Let's see.
I'll share it in the chat really quick.
Okay. But anyways, I can't believe you wouldn't know what that is. But like I said, Hillsfar is the odd duck.
Yep, that is the gold box style.
Just a buff-ass ghost.
Where are you looking? I'm looking for the buff-ass ghost that you're complaining about. Because I have the actual page up.
He has
Unless
it in the
gin there.
He's looking at a picture. There's a looks like a minotaur ghost, and he's like flexing. And he's coming up like from a pool of water, and you have your little party sitting in front of it, and there's a little side screen where the character list is, and there's a little description. It's like, fools, you have slain the body I possessed. I cannot be defeated with the power of the pool. Oh, yeah, Pool of Radiance. Yeah, this is Pool of Radiance. That's Taraxin, I think. I forgot his name exactly. It's like Terrax or something.
And then they had the... Yeah. Unlimited Adventures, which I did a lot of. That was my favorite. I mean, the gold box games were okay, but being able to make your own gold box game, that was a dream.
Yeah, that was awesome. And Dragonlance also had gold box games. There were a lot of gold box games, though,
the Dragonlance games.
Yeah.
It does look like there were a ton of them, and they all look pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the thing. The good thing about the first four games that were Forgotten Realms, you could actually import your characters. So your characters kept on leveling up and leveling up and leveling up. And I'm telling you, when you got your seventh level spells, you felt like a god.
Oh, definitely. Flinging meteors and huge fireballs and ice storms.
The only problem was with Pools of Radiance. If you're fighting, like, 40 kobolds, you could just put your hand on your shoulder, elbow on your shoulder, and just wait. Because each and every character had to move, attack, and all that, and it was like,
oh, yeah,
taking forever. They streamlined that. That's why sleep was my favorite spell, because it made them stop. Yeah, it made them a lot of them go to sleep so you could just one-hit kill them. But more importantly, they couldn't move and they couldn't act. Some of them used to get faster.
So just imagine using a slow computer, and then they would go very slowly.
I use the Commodore 64. I mean,
they could be slow if you had a slow computer. I remember it being slow, and then later on, I got a better computer, and they would go flying.
See,
across
the later games though, would streamline it,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it would streamline the action, and you'd get a thing in which just show me the results.
Yeah. Wherever they are, we'll go there. But I liked seeing what was happening, though, you know, because I didn't really like surprises. I wanted to see the damage coming and where they moved. Cause sometimes I would lose track of where they moved if they were, like, off-screen.
It was extremely faithful, too. I mean, God forbid you faced one of the big creatures, and instead of taking up one hex, they would take up four.
Yeah, like the dragons.
So, yeah, I mean, here's the thing. When you were playing, it was really faithful to the game, too.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that was not faithful to was that if you had a low charisma, no one cared.
Right. The charisma didn't matter in that game.
No. I mean, that's why when Fallout came around, then things started mattering.
Yeah. All of the abilities mattered.
But in this game, all you really had to do... you could always cheat and just 18 everything, but...
Yeah,
it's kind of missing the point.
There's a bunch of these that just straight up look like what if Oregon Trail, but like D&D,
and overland maps. Yeah,
and I'm extremely into that aesthetic.
It never got like that though. I mean, you did have the overland map in which you go from dot to dot to dot, you know, and you could backtrack and stuff like that. But yeah. Pools of Darkness was the last one of the Forgotten Realms games, and they weren't kidding. It was friggin' depressing to play, because things just went really south at that point.
Yeah.
But here's the other thing. The main complaint about Pools of Radiance is that there was no plot. There was absolutely no plot. It was just, you're going on an adventure, and you're having these encounters, and that's it. There was nothing really tying the story together. It wasn't until the next one, Curse of the Azure Bonds, that you actually had a story.
Yeah, you're kidnapped and a bunch of cult people put these little brands on you, and each brand represented a different faction of that group, and they would try to use you as an assassin to go take out their targets, and you had to kill the leader of each of these groups to take off the brands. It was interesting. It was really fun. Of course, I read the books, but those are a separate story.
Yeah. The Gold Box games went from 1988 to 1993, and you know, it felt a lot longer than that. It felt like a million years.
It did. It felt like an entire era.
Yeah. And then Unlimited Adventures came out in 1994, and that was it. So anyways, yeah, people didn't like Hillsfar because it was basically an action game with some role-playing elements, but I really enjoyed it. It was cool. Anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net. Along with industry news and our gaming history articles, we enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast, or check out iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. And thank you for being with this Video Game Roundtable for 400 episodes, and for being with TD Gaming Podcast for 567 since 2007. I mean, since 2007, just 13 years. I actually posted the 10th year anniversary celebration, and that was 3 years ago, and I said, that makes me feel old.
Yeah, I saw that.
We celebrated the 10th anniversary of 3 years ago to this date. Well, not quite. It was February. So anyways, so we will see you in episode 800, which would be, let's see, that would be 2031.
Wow.
And if we're still doing this by that time, that would be really, really sad. And knowing my obsessive nature, at least I'll be doing it.
Yeah, well, I'll probably be here.
Probably? Are you expecting a funeral sometime soon?
I hope not, but I never guarantee anything.
Well, what happens is that by that time, TJ will be running a site and be a multimillionaire.
God, that would be nice.
And he'll be funding the podcast. But for now, he'll be playing Resident Evil 3 next week.
For sure.
Well, actually, not next week. It's 11 days for the... The demo.
Three days for the demo, and then...
11 days for the Resident Evil Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll be interested in that. Oh, boy. You know, I've been doing a lot of Kickstarter backing as well for board games, and I really ought to stop. So... I don't know. I am hoping PAX Unplugged is ready to go. That's going to be in... When was this year's? October? It was in October, right? I'm hoping to do PAX Unplugged again, because that was cool. Just board games, nothing else. Because here's the thing. PAX East is fine with their board game thing, but... I don't know what it is. It's not fun at PAX East. I think PAX Unplugged, since it's all about the board games, it's a lot better.
When the world isn't crushing itself under the weight of a pandemic disaster, you should come down to PAX South. It's way more relaxed and really enjoyable.
Yeah, but where would I stay? See, that's the problem. When is PAX South anyway? I think PAX South already went. Yeah,
It's always at the end of January.
Yeah, so let's see. Rumors, PAX, you know, they don't even know when the PAX South 2021 is going to be. When it's going to be.
It almost always takes place at the end of January.
Yeah, in San Antonio?
Yep.
Anyways, we will see you next week for 401. It's always a bummer. After you do a landmark, it's like, okay, next episode is 401. Starting up till 500. Only 99 more episodes to go.
It's a new journey. And we're all taking it together.
Well, you know, later this year, way after the pandemic has passed probably, I would estimate like in September, I think. September, maybe November, October, will be the 600th episode of the TD Gaming Podcast. So we'll have that round number to deal with coming up. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Wait, hold on. Handles.
Oh, yeah. You can find me at Twitter, at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chokes.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And you can tell how practiced we are at this podcast. It always runs really smoothly, and we never make mistakes. We will see you next week for the grand total of 401. Oh, wait, it'll be a Levi's episode.
I thought that was 501.
Oh, well, that ruins it. Well, in 19 weeks, we'll have the drug. We'll have the marijuana episode. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Molly 400 on this note. You killed 2,000 pounds worth of kobold. You can only take 100 back. Have
I'm
fun.
Not
be
playing
cool.
Any
play
more game. No Man's Sky. Damn it.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.
That's what all I needed was some more No Man's Sky. Screw you. I'm gonna go play Elite Dangerous. Except I don't own it. No, you know what? I'm gonna go play some Star Citizen. Well, I don't own that yet either. Who knows when that'll come out?
You know, one of
it will be episode
them.
500 by the time Star Citizen comes out.
Yeah. That's entirely possible.
Maybe by the time... Well, see, 500 will be in almost 2 years, so no, I don't think it'll be out by 500. That'll be the great race. I'm going to start posting Star Citizen. What episode will it come out on? Oh, dear. Anyways, see you next week. Bye-bye.
Later.
All right, let me just put on... You ever heard of popcorn?
Popcorn, yes.
Yes.
By Hot Butter?
Yes.
Do you know the game Pengo? Which used popcorn.
No, I don't know that. I do know that that song, Popcorn, it was one of my favorite parts of the movie Drowning Nana.
I only know about popcorn, the thing you eat.
You know the song Popcorn. You know it even if you don't know the name.
It's a cute little electronica song.
It's one of the first synthesizer songs from a Moog synthesizer. And it goes... know it, and here's the thing, it's been remixed about 1 quadrillion times.
It was put in like a children's album by a really, really annoying character.
But for video games, it's best known for being in Pengo. It plays over and over and over again.
Well, speaking of electronica dance songs, I'm really surprised that the hamster dance song is just a sped up Robin Hood cartoon. Robin, and Disney let them get away with that?
No. They didn't care.
I guess. Wow.
One thing, it's not the entire song.
It's just enough.
The opening, and then Alan O'Dell laughs, and that's it.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
It's sad that the original site is gone. I mean, they have some sites that, emulate it, but no one knew about it until that damn commercial from Earthlink. In which it was talking about how to annoy your neighbor, your cubicle neighbor. Just leave that on all night. And people say, it's not hamster dance, it's hamster dance. I don't know why the P is in there.
I don't know either.
They have it on YouTube, actually. That's the only
place. Oh, yeah, I know.
It's the only place you can actually find, but it's not the same as having a site in which you just let it go on and on and on and on and on. I actually left that thing over on overnight, and it actually helped me go to sleep.
Wow.
It was back in 2000, I think. When did it first happen? Hamster dance. 2005. CNET named the hamster dance the number one web fad. It's a 9-second loop file of Whistle Stop. So. But yeah, I mean, Popcorn actually reached 9th in Billboard.
Wow. That was a lot.
You have Giorgio Moroder, but he only had one song ever go to the top 20 in Billboard, and that was Chase from Midnight Express. And people know that song, too, even though they don't know the name of it. If you ever do Chase Giorgio Moroder, you'll hear his, oh, that song. Okay. I have to remind myself again. Chase Giorgio Moroder. And it goes, and Midnight Express was really violent. I had a guy biting off someone's tongue and spitting it out. Jesus Christ.
The song is 13 minutes long?
Yeah, but it's from a movie, and B, it is a disco hit, so you can have a song going that long. You have to give plenty of time for songs to merge in and out again. But if you Google Giorgio Moroder Chase and you hear it, you'll say, oh, okay, I know that song. Casablanca Records, the one thing I remember is that every time I bought a Kiss album, they were Casablanca. That's the only way I remember them. Wow, your mic is really close to your keyboard. It's really pounding.
Okay.
Okay, let's start this fucker. Remember that from Ed Wood?
Tonight we've got a really good show.
Let's shoot this fucker. Fuck. I'm doing this differently for this one episode, see, so it's kind of strange.